It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Sikh Temple of Wisconsin is holding a series of events through the weekend to remember the victims 10 years ago today. Seven Sikh worshipers lost their lives during the hateful violence in a house of worship. A candlelight vigil set for tonight. Community event will be held tomorrow, and that includes interfaith conversations. It includes workshops on turban tying and, of course, honoring the lives lost. Join in 800-642-1234. Ken Foote is a geography professor at the University of Connecticut, where he directs the Urban Community Studies program. He researches public memory and commemoration in geography and landscapes and is a Madison native. Ken, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. It's nice to be back, even if it's just a virtual interview today.
Well, the Oak Creek Memorial, and you're familiar with it, there are photos of the victims lining a wall in the temple. There is a bullet at the entrance to the prayer hall and a small, small plaque directly beneath the bullet hole, and it reads, "We are one." What do you think of these memorials at the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin?
So I think these memorials are very important. And they're a very important part of both grieving the victims and remembering them. And it is true that in many cases, these memorials emerge spontaneously, but it's not always the case. Even in some of the situations where there have been these awful killings at churches and temples and so forth, in some cases, people find it very difficult to return to the site and may actually even tear down the building and remove it from the community, because the memories are so raw and so difficult. I sympathize with what happened at the Sikh temple 10 years ago, and wish I could join in some of the memorial events today as well.
What impact do memorials have on us and the way we think about a mass shooting?
I think these memorials are very difficult, in part because they cut two ways. In one sense, I use the term sanctification to indicate that people really have a need to honor the victims or to remember them. And so there is a sense that something should be done to really honor them, and oftentimes at the site of the tragedy. On the other hand, there is a sense that these are such awful events people would like to forget. They don't want to be reminded of what's happened. I say that oftentimes these events lead to this obliteration, trying to remove the evidence. So these sites, I think, are always in tension between that desire to remember or honor the victims, to do something for the good of the community, and the tension of trying to remove that evidence and draw attention away from the killer and so forth. And so that tension remains for years and years and years. And no matter how much maybe the family members or the congregation would like to honor those of the community that were lost, there's always just kind of a razor edge between honoring the victims and calling attention to the killings themselves. And so this tension, I think, remains even when we try and provide that kind of event that helps the community overcome the tragedy. There's a very difficult tension involved in that.
Well, looking a little bit more deeply on that tension over years and years, some memorials, they're created decades after the events that they're referencing. Is it a very different process to attempt to create a memorial when the pain is still so real and so fresh? What does time do for memorial creation?
The time element is actually very important, because in some cases, it's very difficult to sort of sort out the meaning of a particular event, how it's impacted the community. In the short term, we have maybe spontaneous memorials or something like that. But oftentimes it takes a long time to kind of assess the impact. And so the anniversaries are very important, like this 10th anniversary. Oftentimes decisions about how to memorialize events are made on anniversaries like the 10th or the 25th, particularly at about 30 or 50 years, when one generation is passing the memory on to the next, that there'll be an effort to try and do something to make sure that memory of the event is not lost. So the timing is actually very, very important to this. And I would also say that over the last couple of generations, there has been a change in the attitude toward these kinds of events. If we went back a generation or two, events like these mass killings that we're seeing so frequently were considered to be so shocking and shameful that I would say that obliteration was more common, that the people didn't want to have the reminder. And if the memorial was going to exist, it would be at the burial site or the site somewhere away from the event. But over the last generation or two, there's been a sense that no matter what the event was, that there should be something done for those who died. And so we see these memorials much more commonly now for events that might not have been memorialized. And that's true of a lot of the, sadly to say, a lot of these mass killings in the last generation.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about public memorials across Wisconsin, the nation, on this anniversary of the Sikh Temple mass shooting. Ken Foote is a geography professor at the University of Connecticut, specializes in public memory and commemoration, studies it in the landscape. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Ken, let's acknowledge your geography, because how does the memorial change based on whether it was a mass shooting at a school or a church or a movie theater, a grocery store? How does the site of the tragedy affect what we will see there in the form of a memorial?
So that's an interesting issue. And when I was invited to join your program, I looked around at some of the information that I have in my files and so forth. And I think that when these events do occur at a church, a temple, a synagogue, or public buildings, schools and so forth, there is oftentimes a little bit more of an effort to create some sort of memorial on site. There are lots of these sorts of mass murders that occur in houses, in off location sites that aren't so public. And I think partly because these are sites that are public, that have a community. They're the center of a community, after all, the church and the city hall and so forth. There is a sense that something should be done for the community. I was thinking even last night of the 16th Street Church, the Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, the bombing in 1963, and those four girls who were killed. There was a memorial. There is a memorial there. They're remembered at the church. And because it was such a blow to the community, it was almost spontaneous that there should be something done there. So I think that having it happen here in Oak Creek at the temple, that it really does push that effort to memorialize forward.
You've been looking around Wisconsin as well about how mass tragedies are memorialized. You've looked at the Camden murder, for instance. What have you seen as you look at other tragedies in Wisconsin?
So that tension exists in other places. One of the sites that I looked at early on years ago was the Ed Gein murders up in Plainfield. Mm-hmm. So he's a serial killer, and beyond. He was a horrible set of crimes. And people were upset that it was calling attention to their community there in Plainfield. And eventually his barn and home were burned down after he was incarcerated. And so that sense of shame that was attached to him did lead to a kind of a chance to obliterate or efface the evidence of the crime. In Crandon, I believe the house where the shootings occurred was torn down. And last I looked, there was a memorial garden planted there for the victims of that shooting. So in that case, there was that sense is the house should not be kept, because there was no way that they wanted to have that remain in their community. So there are these cases where there is this tremendous tension, and it's resolved by trying to remove the evidence of the event.
University of Connecticut geographer Ken Foote studies sites of trauma around the country, here in Wisconsin as well, how to remember and pay tribute to lives lost. And through this lens, we commemorate the attack on the Sikh temple a decade ago and hear your thoughts on how to mark a tragedy. What happens to a house of worship that has taken steps to heal over the years after the mass casualty attack? What does a memorial look like to you? How should it speak to a community? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Stay with us here on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Memorial events continue today and through the weekend on this 10th anniversary of the mass shooting at the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin. The theme of these events is called Heal, Unite, Act. Join in on what those words mean to you 10 years after Oak Creek. 800-642-1234. Ken Foote is with us, geography professor at the University of Connecticut, where he studies the role of place in memorializing tragedy like this one, and stays with us. Ken, you've studied living memorials. Can you explain what a living memorial is?
So I think it's important to point out that we oftentimes think of physical memorials as the outcome of these, but even those memorials are really the center of celebration of anniversaries and so forth. But through the years, people have also developed this concept of living memorials, of trying to promote remembrance through scholarship, study grants, travel, opportunities to bring people together. The ones that I think about is that after the Lockerbie bombing, back in the 80s, many students from Syracuse University were on the plane that went down in Scotland. I think it was about 35 students coming back from their study abroad program. And in the aftermath, Syracuse University created a Remembrance Scholar Program, where they matched students on scholarship with students that were lost in that tragedy as a way of trying to continue the remembrance of those members of the community that were lost. Harvard's famous Widener Library is actually a tribute by a mother who lost her son on the Titanic. Hmm. And so the idea was not to just end with a permanent memorial on the ground somewhere, but to do something that would lead to remembrance in the future. And I think that those kinds of living memorials can be very, very effective and very, very touching because of the way that they carry the memories forward.
There have also been hundreds of stewardship groups across the country that have created living memorials in response to the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Yes. And I'm wondering, what have you learned from studying those types of 9/11 memorials?
The 9/11 was such an important event. It's hard to summarize because it affected the whole world, in the United States, and it affected the sites that were most directly impacted by the killings. And so I think that the efforts there have been really quite impressive, to visit the shrine in New York, or to go to Shanksville, or to visit the memorial at the Pentagon. You really get a sense of the impact that event had on the United States, and it is really like the largest set of memorials that I've seen to these kinds of killings. So I don't know in the future how those will pan out, whether through time people will have different assessments of the consequences of 9/11, but I think that they really have set a kind of a standard for some of these commemorations.
I learned that the Forest Service has this Living Memorials Project, and it's this initiative that brings the power of trees. Trying to bring more trees into these living memorial sites.
Yep.
What is the impact of trees in particular?
Well, trees are a symbol of life. Mm. So it's no accident. In many cases, you get into the symbolism that's used in these memorials, and it's the trees is a symbol of community and tree of life. The flowing water, the circle is a symbol of community. These come up, and that idea, I hadn't heard about that, but it is a very nice idea. There's also, for example, in the Netherlands, there has been an annual commemoration of people who've died of cancer. And, you know, people who die of cancer aren't typically the subject of this commemoration, So in the Netherlands, they started having an annual event where the people who lost family members to cancer go out and plant a tree. They're planting forests for the cancer victims. And so again, it's the use of trees. In Canada, they have a lot of lakes, and they've actually named a lot of lakes after the soldiers who died in the wars. So there are other ways, I think, that are quite creative ways to remember either battlefield losses or events like the ones we're talking about today.
Earlier this week, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson introduced a resolution commemorating the 10th anniversary of the attack and honoring the seven victims. And he had introduced a similar resolution at the one-year anniversary of the Sikh temple attack. How meaningful are Senate resolutions like this? How meaningful are words?
I think those resolutions play a part in this, but I would say that it's the government action that comes later that can be very, very important. But what I mean is that in many cases, these shrines, these memorials start off as a local effort by the community that was most effective. And because they're very important, sometimes they grow in importance, and that importance shows up with funding and legislation by other agencies. The case I draw attention to very often is the Martin Luther King death site in Memphis, Tennessee, because the first shrine for his shooting there at the Lorraine was by the owner, Walter Bailey. And Walter Bailey said, this is really important that we mark the site of Martin Luther King Jr.'s death. And through the years, Walter Bailey and other members of the community were able to argue for support by the city of Memphis, by the county of Shelby County, by the state of Tennessee, and eventually by the national government. So at each stage, they were generating interest and support to do more at that site because it was so important. So it may be that Johnson's efforts there will help to generate attention and call more attention to the losses in Oak Creek. But these initial resolutions oftentimes are just at the stage of getting the discussion started.
We're talking about memorializing victims of mass tragedies like shootings and murders, weather events. Ken Foote is a geography professor at the University of Connecticut, where he studies commemoration in geography and landscapes. You can join in on memorials that have moved you, memorials you visited, and what you think of them in terms of mass tragedies like shootings. 800-642-1234. Ken, the 9/11 memorial in New York City, as you referenced, it cost hundreds of millions to build and $63 million a year to operate. What role does cost have in these memorials?
In some ways, it has a lot to do with the way that we remember these events and the amount that people are willing to invest in them. And I think it does raise the issue of you know, what designs are right, what are best for the occasion, what's the suitable amount to invest in these memorials. And I certainly have opinions about some of the places that I've studied, but I think the main thing is that it has to be up to the community to decide. And in the case of something like 9/11, it isn't just the folks who died that day and their families, but this event was such a major blow to the United States and to countries all around the world that many people were touched by it. And so it's no accident that it's become such a substantial memorial because people were willing to invest the amount of money. But I would also say that in many cases, as I travel around and visit and talk with people, and sometimes I'm really struck by how very humble memorials, very small remembrances can have a really deep emotional impact. And I'm always struck sometimes in going back and visiting some sites, maybe a school disaster or so on from 75 or 100 years ago. And I go and I find maybe just a small plaque or something, but it's very clear that people are still visiting. They've left flowers, they've left remembrances, that even these humble memorials can be very, very powerful as a way of reminding people of what they've lost and the people that they might once have known.
When I think of humble memorial, I think of the Sikh temple and that bullet hole with the three words, "We are one," right under it. That might be an example.
Yes, I think that's a perfect example. It's very, very powerful, and to visit some of these sites, it's you can just see that it's such powerful emotions are brought up just by being there with the evidence of what had happened. It really is very, very striking.
In the last moments we have together, you brought up tensions about how memorials go forward. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for the Oak Creek community and for houses of worship in terms of where they go forth with memorials when they have different ideas of how to do it.
I think the debate that occurs after these events is really very important, and there's no predicting what direction it will go. But simply the debate, simply discussing this, is very important because, say, a generation or two ago, people would have shut down that kind of discussion entirely and said, no, we'll do it at the graveyard, because that means that people can talk about how they feel about these events. And so opening that up for discussion, I think, is a very important part of the overall process of grieving, of dealing with the lingering effects of these events. So I think that's one of the things. And from what I was reading about the events in Oak Creek this week and through the year, I think that the community has done very well in trying to remember those who are lost. So I think that these efforts are very important, and they're doing the right sorts of things.
Ken, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Ken Foote is a geography professor at the University of Connecticut, studies how and why Americans memorialize the sites of tragic and violent events. Stay with us as we continue our conversations on the 10th anniversary of the Sikh temple mass shooting. We have a member of the Sikh community and anti-hate advocate, and the work of hope and healing with an advisor to a survivor retreat. Join in anytime with your reflections, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.